Hello, and welcome to Season 2, Episode 13 of the Fashion Law Network podcast. I'm your host, Kasia Zabrowska-Traubin, a patent attorney and fashion enthusiast based in Los Angeles, California. Join me as I break down legal cases going on in the world of fashion today, discuss recent fashion news, and demystify patent law. On this episode, I'll be discussing the interplay of fashion and art, street art in particular, and the various intellectual property issues that may arise. And at the end of the episode, I'll provide an analysis of a few really interesting lawsuits in this area of the law. So this episode came from a moment of inspiration I had the other week when I was going for an evening run around my neighborhood here in Los Angeles, California, and I came across the front window display of one of my favorite local fashion boutiques here called Elise Walker. The entire huge front window looked like it had been graffitied by these beautiful, colorful, dripping hearts with the word "Spread Love" written at the top. It was so gorgeous, it stopped me mid-run. And I have a photo of this gorgeous window display on my Instagram at patentlawyerla. I immediately recognized the hearts as being the art of street artist James Goldcrown as a part of his Bleeding Hearts series. Goldcrown is a London-born artist and photographer, and according to his website, jgoldcrown.com, his many projects led to his first show at Miami Basel. It's the Art Basel Festival, where his work sold out in only 2 hours. He is really known for his Bleeding Hearts or Love Wall murals, which consist of these dripping hearts that I saw on the front window of my fashion boutique that I very often frequent. Goldcrown has collaborated with lots of different brands and companies like L'Oreal, Rag & Bone, Sephora, MTV, Vogue, among many, many others. And his work is seen all over the world. So when I saw this window display collaboration on my run with this fashion store, it really got me thinking about street artists and graffiti art in general and the intellectual property legal issues that may come into play here. For example, what are the legalities of street art and what are the elements that must be satisfied there? So then I started delving more into the world of some of my favorite street artists and probably one of the most famous ones, Banksy and Mr. Brainwash. And I was really fascinated by all the legal issues that I uncovered during my research. The general law is that graffiti is not legal on public property or private property, other than which you own, of course. And here in California, where I practice law, it's classified as vandalism. So according to the California Penal Code, Section 594, which governs this, it states that vandalism prohibits you from maliciously damaging, destroying property, and defacing property with graffiti or other inscribed material. Now, the key word here is maliciously. And that means intentionally committing a wrongful act or acting with the unlawful intent to annoy or injure someone. So if you have the permission of the owner of the property, then the graffiti art is legal. It's a common sight in Los Angeles for a property owner to allow someone to create a mural on the side of a building. In some cases, property owners even hire someone to create a work of art on their buildings. And here in Southern California, we have lots of these Instagram famous wall murals all over the city of LA, where the property owners allow the street artists to paint on the walls and oftentimes hire artists to create these huge wall murals. And these murals are really popular here with long lines of people oftentimes waiting to get their photo taken in front of them. There is a lot of overlap between art and fashion law in terms of intellectual property because essentially both are artists, fashion designers, and the kind of prototypical painter artist or sculpturalist. So both genres use similar IP tools to protect themselves, like copyrights, trademarks, and maybe even patents in some cases. I went over the basic tenets of intellectual property law in the art world in a previous episode of my podcast series back in season 1, episode 13, which was aptly titled Art Law. So I won't repeat all of that here again, but I will focus mainly on these street art issues that arise. Another major street graffiti fashion moment etched in my brain was the limited edition Louis Vuitton collection as designed by street artist Steven Spruce. It consisted of neon green and neon pink graffiti paint on top of the usual Louis Vuitton monogram bags, and in graffiti it read Louis Vuitton. Now, this collection was then resurrected for a second time in the late 2000s due to its major popularity when Marc Jacobs was the creative director of Louis Vuitton. These items are no longer available for purchase from the Louis Vuitton store, so the only way to get them is through the secondhand luxury sales market, but the prices are extremely high for these elusive bags now. Okay, so first let's discuss the street artist Mr. Brainwash. His real name is Terry Guetta, and he is now based in Los Angeles, and he's famous for lots of different types of street art. One of his most popular ones is the Life is Beautiful series, which is kind of like an art piece with the words Life is Beautiful in neon, and it's also the title that he used to use for some of his exhibits that he had in the past. Now, as for the origins of his name, Mr. Brainwash, he has been quoted as saying, "I came up with the idea that the whole movement of art was about brainwashing." So I guess that's how he came up with his name, Mr. Brainwash. He's also really known for appropriation art. So, for example, he has this one art piece, which is his take of Andy Warhol's soup can, that famous Campbell's tomato soup. And Mr. Brainwash turned it into a spray can, for example. And then he has a mixed media silkscreen art piece of supermodel Kate Moss with graffiti all over in the background. So for this lawsuit, in a somewhat interesting twist, the artist Mr. Brainwash sued a musical festival company for trademark infringement, among other items. But before we get into the details of that case, let's just quickly go over some basic trademark law. So whoever's listened to this podcast before probably knows this by heart now, but if anybody's new or a non-attorney, or maybe you just forgot, a trademark is a symbol, word, or words that are legally registered or established by use as representing a company or product. And trademarks can be split into two different types. You can have a character mark or a logo mark, or both. Character marks protect the actual word or the brand name of a company or product. So here it could be Mr. Brainwash, if that was the name of his company, for example. And then another type of trademark is the logo, which in our example is usually a paint-splattered heart that Mr. Brainwash would often use with his various art and his company. So now in getting into this lawsuit filed by Mr. Brainwash, it all started when, back in 2013, going into 2014, a Las Vegas street fair decided to call itself Life is Beautiful. And they used an image of a heart made of splash paint, very similar to Mr. Brainwash's heart. And Mr. Brainwash claimed that the street festival was causing confusion in the street art marketplace. So Mr. Brainwash, through his company, which was called, I think it still is called, Amusement Art, sued this festival owner back in 2014. For various claims, such as trademark infringement under Section 32(1) of the Lanham Act. Another claim was unfair competition, false designation of origin, passing off, and false advertising. Claim 3 was copyright infringement. claim for unfair competition, and common law trademark infringement and unfair competition. Now, I'm going to, as usual, mostly focus on the trademark and copyright claims here. The original complaint by Mr. Brainwash started out by stating that he's the owner of numerous trademarks for the name Life is Beautiful, and he listed them, and he also said he's the owner of copyrights for various images of the splashed heart designs. And then the complaint goes on to state that the Defendant Music Festival filed various trademark applications for Life is Beautiful under the musical festival category. Then it was alleged that between around 2011 and 2012, Mr. Brainwash, through his company, filed his own various trademarks for Life is Beautiful in, I think, over like 100 different categories, like paints, electronics, jewelry, leather goods, glassware. Now, just as a side note here, when you file for a trademark, you have to file it under a certain goods and services class, meaning, for example, if you're selling something, you'd have to say that it's under the housewares category if you're selling housewares, or perhaps you're selling paint. So that trademark has to be associated with your goods or services category here. So here, Mr. Brainwash was filing these under many, many categories. And unfortunately, the music festival company determined that Mr. Brainwash didn't actually sell many of the goods on which it obtained registration. And it told Mr. Brainwash that they were going to seek cancellation on the basis of fraud on the United States Patent and Trademark Office. Now, canceling a trademark registration for fraud requires five elements. Element one is a false representation regarding a material fact. Two, the registrant's knowledge or belief that the representation is false. Three, the registrant's intent to induce reliance upon the misrepresentation. Four, you have to have actual and reasonable reliance on that misrepresentation. And five, damages proximately caused by that reliance. So then Mr. Brainwash, through his company, Amusement Arts, withdrew these registrations, and he claimed that they were filed by executives who didn't really speak English very well. The district court here dismissed those claims because the Amusement Arts Company defrauded the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office by submitting some incorrect photographs purporting to show that they had used the mark on their various products. So basically, the Life is Beautiful Music Festival company won at the district level here. And then Mr. Brainwash appealed that ruling to the Ninth Circuit. And the appeal here reads, Plaintiff Amusement Art, or Mr. Brainwash, appeals the district court's order granting summary judgment to Life is Beautiful LLC on Mr. Brainwash's trademark and copyright infringement claims. In addition, both Mr. Brainwash and the Music Festival appealed the district court's award of attorney's fees to the Music Festival company. So I'm not going to go over the appellate decision on the attorney's fees. We'll just focus on the trademark and copyright infringement claims here. So the memo from the appellate court here states that the district court properly dismissed Mr. Brainwash's allegations that the Life is Beautiful Music Festival infringed Mr. Brainwash's Life is Beautiful trademark. This is because the district court dismissed those claims due to the fraud on the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office by submitting false affidavits and photographs. We went over that previously. And Mr. Brainwash had previously withdrawn those registrations. So he's not appealing the dismissal of those claims. There's not much of an issue here. Now, number two in this appellate memo states that we affirm the district court's dismissal of the copyright and trademark claims associated with Mr. Brainwash's Splash Paint Heart. Mr. Brainwash had no valid trademark because the record does not show that he used the heart as a source identifier. In fact, Mr. Brainwash's corporate designee testified that the splash painted heart was a copyrighted image, not a trademark, and Mr. Brainwash waived the splash paint heart copyright claim by failing to adequately address it in his opening brief. So that's a pretty big blow here to Mr. Brainwash. Now, this part of the appellate memo is also interesting. Life is Beautiful Music Festival is not entitled to fees on the splash painted heart copyright claim. Although Mr. Brainwash ultimately lost, the claim was neither frivolous nor objectionably unreasonable. Indeed, Mr. Brainwash held a valid registered copyright of his heart image, and there were a number of striking similarities between the two splash heart images. Moreover, Life is Beautiful's founder, the music festival founder, pulled several images of Mr. Brainwash's art off the internet and relied on those images to pitch the festival and get funding. So that's an interesting quote there also. And then a few years prior to that lawsuit with the music festival, Mr. Brainwash had another instance of bad luck with a lawsuit, but he was on the other side of it. He got sued by a photographer who took an iconic picture of Sid Vicious, who's the now deceased lead singer of the band The Sex Pistols. And in that case, Mr. Brainwash had appropriated an image that the photographer had taken of Mr. Vicious. The image is, or the photograph is, where the rocker is winking at the camera and his head is kind of at an angle. And Mr. Brainwash took this image and he changed it by making the image have more contrast. He added a few elements like neon paint to it. He made about 7 various images of that. And the crux of this lawsuit was the question whether Mr. Brainwash's images were fair use. And unfortunately for Mr. Brainwash, the judge stated, and I'm quoting here, "The original photograph is a picture of Sid Vicious making a distinct facial expression. Mr. Brainwash's works are of Sid Vicious making that same expression. Most of defendants' works add certain new elements, but the overall effect of each is not transformative. Defendants' work remains at its core pictures of Sid Vicious." So he unfortunately lost that lawsuit also. Now let's discuss another world-famous street artist who just goes by the name Banksy. The interesting thing about Banksy is that he insists on remaining anonymous, and no one knows his true identity. What we do know about him is that he's based in England, is a film director, and a political activist. His street art typically combines graffiti in kind of like a stencil technique with dark humor. For example, one of his most famous pieces is titled Flower Thrower, and it depicts a man with his face covered in a bandana kind of swinging his arm in what you're expecting he's going to be throwing a bomb or some sort of weapon, but it's actually a bouquet of flowers instead. And this art piece was actually at the center of a recent lawsuit in Europe. So obviously I'm not going to be applying American IP law here. According to independent.co.uk, it all started when UK-based greeting card company called Full Black started selling greeting cards with the Banksy flower thrower image on the cards. Banksy had applied for a European Union trademark for the artwork of his flower thrower art, but his mark was opposed by the greeting card company, and the greeting card company argued that the artist was not entitled to the trademark because he didn't wish to use it for purposes of branding or selling items. So then Banksy proceeded to open up his own shop last fall in 2009, with various images of his artwork for sale and some like random disco balls made out of random items. And it's allegedly reported that in an interview, where I'm assuming his face was obscured, Banksy stated that he only opened the shop for the purpose of fulfilling these trademark categories. And if that's true, this is probably not the best thing to do. And as a side note, it's also reported that Banksy does not like intellectual property law. And he actually wrote in one of his books that, quote, copyright is for losers. Maybe he'll change his mind after this case, though, because unfortunately for him, the judges at the European Union Intellectual Property Office held in favor for Full Color Black. And here's a quote from the judges. Banksy has chosen to remain anonymous and, for the most part, to paint graffiti on other people's property without their permission, rather than to paint it on canvases or his own property. And now let's move on and discuss a recent landmark case in which street artists got a huge win. So in this case, it all started when there was a well-known kind of warehouse property lot. It was called Five Points Warehouse Complex in Long Island City, Queens, New York, where a lot of street artists would gather and paint the exterior of this warehouse. Lots of murals, graffiti, or aerosol art covered the exterior of this warehouse. And this was all done with the permission of the warehouse property owner, Mr. Wolkoff. He actually then appointed artist Jonathan Cohen, who went by the artist name Mayor's One, to be like the manager or the curator of this warehouse art site. And according to news.artnet.com, the Five Points warehouse development evolved into a famous location for aerosol art, and it attracted thousands of celebrities, visitors, and was often featured on TV and various media outlets. So it became kind of like a art mecca. Then a few years later, problems arose when Mr. Wolkoff, the property owner, wanted to develop the property into condos. And the artists obviously did not like this, and they tried to get a restraining order. But then in the middle of the night, in November of 2013, the entire space was whitewashed, covering all their art. So the artists were very upset, and they sued the property owner or his realty company, GNM Realty, for a violation of the Visual Artists' Rights Act of 1990, which basically gives visual artists some moral rights and copyright law. And then according to the official Copyright Office website, copyright.gov, they kind of talk more about this act. It states that in 1990, Congress for the first time legislated limited moral rights of attribution and integrity to authors of narrowly defined works of visual arts. These rights mirror the rights granted to authors by most industrialized nations of the world. They guarantee to authors of so-called fine arts and exhibition photographs the right to claim or disclaim authorship in a work, limited rights to prevent distortion, mutilation, or modification of a work, and the right under some circumstances to prevent destruction of a work that is incorporated into a building. So then, according to news.artnet.com, again, in 2018, the Brooklyn Supreme Court Judge Frederick Block ruled for the artists, and he held that the developer company violated the rights of the artists, and he awarded the artists $6.75 million in this major decision. And this sum was broken down by giving $150,000 for each of the 45 destroyed works at the center of the case. And this is the maximum legal penalty. So he went to the full extent here. So then his decision was appealed by the developer or the realty company, and the appeals court agreed with the initial ruling for the artists. And again, as initially reported by newsartnet.com, the court even went so far in their decision to state, quote, For example, noted street artist Banksy has appeared alongside President Barack Obama and Apple founder Steve Jobs on Time Magazine's list of the world's 100 most influential people. The developer was not happy with this decision, of course, and he took it to the Supreme Court. However, on October 5th of 2020, so just a couple months ago, the Supreme Court declined to hear the case, thereby affirming the artist's win in the previous court ruling that awarded them $6.75 million. Now, even more recently, as reported by Law 360, the developer must now pay more than $2 million in attorney's fees on top of that $6.75 million award for violating the Visual Artists' Rights Act. The decision issued just, I think, 2 months ago, brings the total fees that have to be paid out by G&M Realty to $8.75 million. Now, this is really a landmark cake for street artists, and it's best summarized by Eric Baum, who was a lawyer for the artists, when he stated, quote, "The significance of this decision is that federal law now protects not only artwork exhibited in the Museum of Modern Art or the Louvre, but also public murals created with permission." And that concludes this episode. As always, thank you so much for tuning in to all my listeners in over 20 countries now. And please stay tuned next week for my next episode, which will actually be the last episode of season 2. I hope you have a wonderful day. Bye.